Hi, it's Dave. Welcome. Today I'm joined by Emmett Peppers, and we're going to be talking about Tesla's full self-driving beta version 9. We're going to be talking about robotaxi expectations and all the different issues surrounding kind of full self-driving. So I wanted to welcome Emmett back on the show. How are you doing, Emmett?
Hey, Dave. Good. Great to chat with you again. It's been a little while. I hope you're enjoying your vacation.
Yeah, it has been a while. I just came back from a three-week trip to Yosemite, Sequoia National Park, Monterey, and Santa Barbara. Just had a fantastic time.
Sounds incredible. Yeah, I hope to do one of those trips next year myself with my kids and wife. Got to rent the RV and reserve campgrounds way ahead of time, I think you were telling me, right?
Yeah. I definitely highly recommend it. Yeah. Yosemite Valley is like gorgeous, amazing place. So I'm back in SoCal for the time being for the next month or two, actually. But yeah, I wanted to dive into a series of conversations. So we're recording this will be a multi-part series. The first section right now will be on full self-driving robotaxis, just everything surrounding that. So I'm curious, like, what were your thoughts on this recent Tesla full self-driving version beta 9 that just got released? I'm sure you watched a bunch of the videos. What's kind of your kind of insight or, you know, ideas regarding this?
Yeah, I mean, I think I put a tweet out there that was pretty popular about like binge watching this new season of full self-driving beta version 9, a bunch of videos, including yours. And, you know, I think it's really fascinating. You know, it's not perfect. I didn't expect it to be. It's got a lot of work to be done. It wasn't fully clear to me. I mean, there was a few people, you know, it looks like there's an issue with the left turn, like the unguarded left turns or something, unprotected left turns, like not an issue, but maybe discomfort. It's hard to say for sure. Like no one wants their car to get an accident and just lay off the wheel the whole time, right? Mm-hmm. But I can't quite put my finger on a lot of the cases if the car would have driven into an actual accident or it would have stopped last second and people just got comfortable discomfort and just like took control ahead of time, which is fine. I would do the same thing. But if there was like no one in the car and the car was doing its thing, I can't quite tell if the car would actually be getting into accidents on those things or not, or if it's just making turns a little differently than humans are used to and comfortable with. So it's hard to say, but either way, they need to make it more like human so that we can get comfortable with it, you know, its style. I mean, you drove it yourself, so you have personal experience. I mean, do you think there's a possibility some of those interventions you had to take over on that the car would have like abruptly stopped before an accident or it would have somehow made the turn without an accident without you taking over or what's your feeling?
Yeah. So I had pretty high expectations going into it. So I've had the beta version 9 for a little over a week or so. To be honest, it has been kind of rough at times. I mean, there are drives where it drives well and I'm surprised. I'm like, oh, that was pretty good drive. But there are other times, especially when it's a little bit complex, there's lots of cars or the visibility isn't the greatest, where it has a rough time. And there's been several times where it's kind of like done some stuff that's just really like scary, you know, just kind of moving into another car. I almost like hit a motorcycle. Like I was driving into a parking lot and it made a wide turn and then a motorcycle just popped out, just trying to get out of the parking lot. And I had to like last minute pull it away. It's been a learning experience because I didn't expect it to be kind of something I had to be so hyper kind of alert. I knew I had to pay attention, but it's different than autopilot, like on the freeway. It just feels like this thing at any moment, it can make the wrong, you know, decision or wrong move. And so you really have to like, you know, pay attention.
It's like driver's ed with like, instead of a 16-year-old, it's like maybe like a 5-year-old driver's ed, but you actually have to take over, you know, before they make their big mistakes of getting a crash or something maybe.
Yeah, what's difficult about like assessing all this is some drives, it drives like great. And then other drives, it has problems at the weirdest time, you know, it's just like I was driving down the street and it was just trying to overtake this car and go around the car when it was a one lane street. And like, there's no way to overtake it, but it kept on trying to overtake it. I'm like, whoa, what's going on?
But do you have it on Mad Max mode? Or
No, I have it on like average mode too. Okay. Yeah, so I've been talking to some of the beta testers, kind of just, you know, asking their opinion on this. And it's kind of mixed. Some people really like it and they think it's like a, you know, great feature right now even. Others are saying this, it's pretty rough right now and it's like it's got a while to go. And I think it really depends like on a lot of the like the driving situation you're around. Like, how is your city kind of manicured? Like, are the street lines like all mm-hmm. painted and is everything kind of, you know, orderly? Then it might actually do quite well in those scenarios. But like, I was in Santa Barbara last week and there were quite a few areas where it's like, it's really kind of crazy. You know, the lane markings aren't really there. And right before sunset, it gets really hard as well. Mm-hmm. And it was having a rough time like getting around in some places. But yeah, it's interesting. I think, in some ways, I'm impressed by like the visualizations and the improvements with, you know, Tesla Vision. But on the other hand, it's like it's got a lot of work, you know, that needs to be done to get better.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like it's all going to depend on how fast it improves from here. Like, there's a whole new foundation to build from, right, with the vision only. And this is like as bad as it's going to be. It's only going to get better from here. And it depends on how quickly it can get better from every new version gets pushed out from here. I think he said like a month or something for the next version recently, but yeah, who knows what kind of timeline that could be. I thought it was gonna be every 2 or 3 weeks for some reason, but
yeah,
it sounds like it might be a month or so.
I think he tweeted like something about version 10 or 11, there'll be a wide release, right, for full self-driving. Mm-hmm. And then someone was asking, is it a month between releases? And he said roughly, but then the thing is like, there's going to be like, I think version like 9.1 and 9.2, 9.3 maybe. And yeah, it might take a few weeks between those versions. So
that'd be great. I think if you can see updates every 2 weeks of new improvements.
Yeah. I'm just kind of skeptical right now that Tesla can actually do a wide release within the next few months. I think it's got a lot of work that needs to be done, you know? I mean,
sure.
Yeah, it's just, I think they need Dojo. I think Dojo is kind of the next level compute engine. They need like this order of magnitude, you know, more powerful training and et cetera. And so, I was super optimistic with, you know, wide release before having the beta in terms of timeline. Now I've kind of reversed a bit. I don't know if we're going to get it by the end of the year, you know. I think that's the goal, the hope, you know. But yeah, it might take longer than some people expect.
Yeah. Yeah, these things, there's just extra delays built in, and you know, we don't know, and there's obstacles. This is a brand new thing they're doing, and of course there's going to be some new obstacles about things. Hopefully they decided vision only is the way. They don't have to like redo and add another sensor back in and redesign their kind of their programming for how the neural networks function, you know. So we'll see.
Yeah. I'm hoping like the next update or two, you know, there'll be massive improvements, but we'll see. So we got a couple questions here. Kevin McCabe says, now that you have FSD9, has your robotaxi timeline adjusted to be closer to Emmett's? Is it remaining the same, or is it even more aggressive? Like, will it continue to get exponentially better and happen sooner? I think your robotaxi timelines were a bit more conservative, right? What was kind of like your
I didn't really have an official timeline. I just wasn't counting on it this year. You know, I thought even if they solve it technologically this year, which it sounds like, based on people's expectations now, may not happen, that it would still take many months to kind of become mass adopted, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I was thinking 2 years out, maybe something like that from a few months ago when we talked about it, I think. But,
yeah,
you know, it's hard to say. I mean, no one knows. It could be really quick adoption, you know, but, you know, it's hard to have a timeline on this. I never thought you'd really put a timeline down either, but maybe you were more aggressive than I was about it, but it sounds like you've kind of taken a step back now, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's okay. So I've divided it up into different kind of sections. So I think we need to get full self-driving to a place where it's relaxing, kind of like, you know, autopilot on the freeway. You could just relax and just kind of, you know, do your thing. You're supervising it, but you're relaxed, right? And I think I had previously thought that full self-driving was at that point where it was like a relaxing experience. But after trying it out and then personally talking with a bunch of beta testers, I realized that it's not relaxing. Like barely anyone has like that type of overall relaxing. Everyone is hyper vigilant right now, you know, because they have to. Yeah. There are periods where you can relax, like if there's no cars around, easy streets, but overall you have to be vigilant. So in order for FSD to get to this place where it's going to be like relaxing, you know, overall, it's going to take, I think, at least probably a year to year and a half from now. Maybe, you know, end of 2022 or so. Right. Mm-hmm. And then after it gets relaxing, then it needs to get to this place where it gets like super, super human, like better than humans. And that's going to take another probably couple years, you know, to the point, to the point where you don't need supervision anymore. Right. Meaning it doesn't have those crazy edge cases where, you know, it just makes the wrong move at the wrong time. So that's going to be another couple years at least. And so if it's end of 2022, it gets relaxing, maybe end of 2024, 2025, when we can maybe see kind of no supervision, kind of like robo-taxis out on the street. But yeah, that's like, I mean, it's challenging. Like this stuff is like really hard, you know, the problems. I kind of wonder if Tesla needs an interim solution where they have robo-taxis where people can jump in the front seat, the driver's seat, actually, you know, and oversee the robo-taxi. So I don't know if that's allowed even, but maybe in certain cities, you know, the robo-taxi will drive to the person, but then the person jumps in the front seat, oversees their ride, you know, to the next destination, gets out. So there's an extra layer of kind of safety, you know, maybe just for a while, like a year or two or something. But yeah, I don't know. This whole dream of like sleeping in a car, you know, while the car takes you from point A to point B, I think it's it's a tough one, you know. It's going to be at least a few years out, you know. I mean, just my revised kind of timeline outlook right
now. That's your revised. I mean, that's from your experience. You have hands-on experience with it. I don't, you know, and you know, maybe if I had hands-on experience, I'd be as conservative as you, but I still think it, you know, it depends a lot in the next couple of releases. The next month or two, I think, will be very telling. It's hard to reserve judgment. I haven't experienced it like you, obviously, but I feel like in the next 1 or 2 months, we'll figure out how fast it's improving. If there's a major improvement, then and it happens in 2 weeks, and there's another major improvement that happens 2 weeks later, I think it could be a lot faster. But
that's true.
You know, that's what it depends on to me. Yeah. It just feels like it's gonna be a long time from the last update, which because they had to kind of backtrack to just vision only, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, there's also the possibility that this version 9, the first update now, is kind of buggy because they removed radar. So they have like, they have legacy code that relies on radar. And so they need to kind of like, this is the first most buggy version, you know? And then the next version maybe will be dramatically better. So yeah, we'll definitely see. So we know that Tesla released their monthly subscription package, so $199 for full self-driving capability, but it doesn't like have auto steer. It doesn't really have full self-driving, you know. It just has like,
it's a promise for future self-driving.
Depends
how quickly it comes out, really.
I mean, what's your take on this? I mean, I was reading some stuff.
What were you saying?
Yes, I was reading some stuff. Some people are like, what's the point? You know, like it doesn't have the full feature set. So I don't know. What's your take on why Tesla would release a monthly subscription without having the full feature set out?
I think it's, I mean, I'm biased and I have to take it, my opinion with a grain of salt in a way, but I really think it's bullish. I think behind the scenes, Elon and the full self-driving team are expecting massive improvements on the next iterations, the next updates, based on all the feedback they're getting on this one right now. They have the auto labeling in place, maybe pretty efficiently done now to, you know, and I really think that they think it's going to be really, really good, you know, in the next few months. And that's why they're kind of putting the full self-driving subscription capability in place now, to kind of work out the kinks with the payments or the logistics of, you know, questions that are, you know, they didn't think of about, you know, there'll be some early adopters of this. Well, even though it's maybe not a great value at this moment, you know, I think there's still going to be people buying it, and maybe hundreds or thousands of people, you know, and they'll figure out after some issue implementing it, you know. So they're just kind of getting ready for when they, I think, expect tens of thousands of people to be opting in for it, which I think they must think is months away. That's my opinion. They could be wrong, or my opinion on their opinion could be wrong. So it's hard to say.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it makes sense. I mean, also, it makes, like, right now, it's like they only have the purchase option, right? So you get basic autopilot, which is just, it keeps in your lane. You can't even do a lane change right now. Or you have to opt for a $10,000 upgrade, which is a big jump, you know? And so it's like, I think a lot of people just didn't get the $10,000 upgrade, and we're kind of maybe waiting for something, or waiting for wide release, or waiting for something like a subscription package. So it kind of like, yeah, it kind of I think gives something where it now settles the whole options here long term going forward. You know, here's the price, you know, either one time or monthly, and you could decide what to do. But it doesn't change the game in terms of like what's offered right now. You know, it's still kind of the basic navigate on autopilot, lane change, summon, etc.
Just a new way to pay for it. I like the price
Yeah.
point. You know, I think the price point is spot on. I know some people are saying it's too expensive or too little. I think it's a good price point.
Yeah, I agree. I think, I mean, for some people, it is going to be a pretty hefty chunk of change per month. You know, it's like $200 per month. There's some car payments that are $200, you know, per month. And so, but it's going to be like a feature that's kind of this desirable kind of, I would say luxury feature, but it's something that as it gets more relaxing to oversee, let's say, you know, city street driving, I could see it actually be something where it's like, it's a really cool feature to have, you know? And as it gets better and better, it just becomes more of an attractive product. Like, so for example, you know, full self-driving, let's say end of 2021 is going to be the worst version at that time versus the year later. A year later is going to be so much better. And so you have to
Or even two
imagine like,
months, maybe 2 or 3 months later,
yeah,
even.
exactly.
A year
So
later.
whoever has it right at the end of 2021, there's going to be probably more people who have it right a year later and who are happier with it. So it just keeps on getting like that over time. And so yeah, it's definitely an interesting kind of I guess product kind of cycle or evolution we're going to see over the next several years.
Yeah, for
Yeah.
sure.
51 on Twitter says, would a per mile full self-driving subscription model work better? So yeah, I've heard some people ask about that. Right now it's just a monthly all you could, you know, drive type of option. What do you think about a per mile subscription option?
I don't think so. I mean, I think you know, miles on the highway are very different from miles in the cities, you know, the amount of stress, or you know, if you have full self-driving, then it's like all of a sudden you're like, oh, I got a long stretch of highway, I'm just gonna drive it myself because the full self-driving per mile is too much for that. And then you're in a city and you're like, well, you know, even though it's complicated, I get more value out of my full self-driving per mile, so I'll turn it on. You know, it just doesn't seem to align the right way. So I don't like that. Maybe it's hard to segregate it in like highway versus city, because there's so many like hybrid driving capability, you know, situations between, you know, what is questionable. Is this a city or is a highway? You know, highways going through cities or whatever. So I don't think that's gonna happen. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think Tesla likes to make it kind of super simple, so they don't want to overcomplicate it. But on the flip side, you do have some people who are driving kind of less miles than other people, right? Maybe who drive 8 or 9,000 miles per year, and they're like, you know, I don't need full self-driving all the time, and $200 a month is maybe a lot more than what they use it for, right? Compared to a person who drives 20 or 30,000 miles. So I don't know. I mean, Tesla has a lot of options. They could change the pricing. They could have different tiers. Who knows? But I
They
think
could.
I think it's just a
They
it's
don't
a
want to complicate it early on, I think.
it's a
Maybe
decent
down the
first
road.
option. Yeah, definitely. Dean on Twitter says, how can Tesla mitigate the impact of an accident resulting in a death on FSD, and what impact it'll have on the company or stock?
I mean, how can Tesla doesn't really have a PR department in the US, you know, so it's they're doing what they can and putting out the safety statistics. I mean, I think we know that Tesla is saving lives statistically already, you know, innumerable, like lots of lives. Then you have like there's a Twitter handle I've tried to retweet several times, Saved Tesla or Tesla Saved or something like that. And they have like, I don't know, 5,000 followers. Not that big, but I think they should be really well known, and we should try to like get that type of Twitter handle more exposure, because they're showing like every case they can of like where Teslas have saved a life, whether it's from dash cam footage or just some obscure local newspaper report that wasn't picked up nationally, but a local newspaper showed a Tesla that fell off a cliff and the person walked away without an injury. You know, things that like Tesla is obviously saving lives on. Those instances are kind of fun to see, almost like a race car crash is fun to see, but instead you're seeing, wow, this crazy thing happened and the person survived, you know? And I think people would be drawn to it, you know, for clicks if it could get out there a little more, you know? So I think trying to help build that type of exposure for Tesla ahead of time can help kind of front run the inevitable autopilot death crash that will happen sooner or later. That's my thought as the best thing to do, but how to do that, there's a lot of different ways, I guess, but Tesla doesn't have a PR, so it kind of limits the options to some degree. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think the trickiest part right now is going to be the transition from kind of this hyper vigilant beta to this place where you get FSD in a relaxing, you can oversee it in a relaxing manner, right? There's a transition period. And the reason why it's tricky, because if once you get to this place where you're relaxed with FSD, then you have an overall positive experience with it. And so whatever FUD comes out, owners will kind of, by word of mouth, refute that FUD. They say, no, this is a great feature. It's like relaxing and all this stuff, right? But if it's not relaxing and you're having to like hyper vigilantly like oversee, babysit this thing, and then there's FUD that comes out, now it's going to be harder to refute that FUD by word of mouth because owners have a mixed kind of experience with it, right? And so what you want ideally is you want to release it wide release and wait as close as you can to where it's relaxing enough, where the word of mouth is going to be so great, you know, right, that it can refute the FUD, right? The risk factor is, especially if it's released this year, there's going to be a lot of people who have mixed opinions about it because it's like rough at times, you know, and the joke amongst FSD beta testers is like, what's my car trying to do to me? It's like, you know, it's trying to do some crazy stuff. So occasionally, right? And so because you have this mixed response, if there's like accidents and, you know, bad stuff happening, like it's the word of mouth is not going to refute it as well. Right. And that's the tricky kind of place. And eventually Tesla will overcome it. It's just going to be a messy 6 to 12 months, you know? So yeah, it depends. Like there's pros and cons, right, to releasing wide release early, right? You get it out, but like it's a risky limbo period, I think, for Tesla to be in. Hopefully they can get to the relaxing kind of stage ASAP, right? But we'll see, you know, how long it's
And
ready.
they already have like one or two strikes against them from false reporting that wasn't like, you know, that wasn't rebutted well enough or wasn't, you know, taken back, like the Texas crash. I mean, I think in like half the country's mind, they still think it was an autopilot crash, you know? So it's already got one or two strikes against them falsely, you know, and unfairly in maybe half the country's mind, you know. So in the US at least. It's just it's gonna be tough. Yeah, that first autopilot death, legitimate autopilot death crash, you know, there's gonna be all kinds of terrible, you know, headlines about it. And if they have it on video, and you know, just like the first fires on video was more sensational. If they have it on video of like some kid getting run over in a stroller by a car on autopilot or whatever, if it's something like that, I mean, that's going to be outcries to like congressmen and stuff. And that could put like a complete hold on things for a long time, in my opinion. So I hope that doesn't happen.
You and I, over the years, we've like had conversations about the safety of Tesla and of Tesla vehicles. And I know that you like, that's one of your biggest criterias. And it's interesting to me, like, how like safe like I or how much I value safety in a Tesla vehicle. For example, I was talking to my wife. We're kind of traveling right now, but I mean, we shipped our Model 3 from Texas to California so we could use it for a few months while we're here. And it's got full self-driving beta, and I've got all these cameras set up now. I'm doing like this crazy, I tried this four camera outfit today and doing all this stuff. And so I feel like my wife, I feel bad that she has to drive with all these cameras, or that I might use it and she has to take the kids out. So we're thinking maybe I have to rent a car, or do we just lease a car?
Get take a
over.
One.
Yeah. Take yeah. over a lease, or do we just buy a second car and sell our Model 3 later? But as I'm thinking about this, I'm like, it's like, it should be as safe as our Model 3 if we can afford it. Right.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, okay, what cars out there are as safe as our Model 3? And it's like, it's tough because it's like the Teslas are getting all these active safety features right now, like blind spot monitoring, like forward collision, all this stuff. And the car itself feels very safe. And so it's like any car we get that's not a Tesla, I feel it's going to be a safety downgrade, you know, from our car, no matter what. And so, yeah, it's something to consider. But it's something, though, like it feels like the general public isn't really aware of, like how superior the safety of Tesla vehicles are, right? And you and I, we're very aware of it, but I don't know, that gap is just, it's interesting, you know? I mean, the question being like, how long will it take before the general public starts to recognize, right, the safety advantage of Tesla? Is it important, right, for them to recognize right now, or is it okay just to gradually recognize it over time? Should Tesla do more, you know, to promote that? What are your thoughts on kind of this overall Tesla safety thing?
Yeah, I think that's number one. I tell friends and family, you know, do you want to cut the third leading cause of death? Do you want to cut it in half or more potentially by, you know, just paying an extra few thousand dollars than you might be comfortable with for a new car? And I explain it to them, like the Tesla safety, you know, car accidents are like, I think the third leading cause of death in the US, or, you know, after cancer and heart disease or something. So, you know, you can instantly just cut that third leading cause of death down very significantly by just upgrading to a Tesla, you know, for you and your family, you know, not just, it's a big deal. Like if some healthcare company, Pfizer, said, hey, I'll sell you this new pill for 10,000 bucks, it'll cut your chances of cancer down, you know, by 40% for the rest of your life. Who wouldn't want to buy that, right? I mean, that's a big deal, right? So I don't understand how that's not out there more, and people don't really get it or can, you know, put, yeah, I guess people just are okay living with the risk of dying in a car accident. You know, it's a significant risk, you know, and not just from our own driving. People think, oh, I'm a safe driver. We don't realize there's like crazy drivers out there, drunk drivers, you know, that's how, you know, people die all the time by getting hit by a drunk driver or someone, you know, so you're going to cut that down big time by just being in a Tesla when you get hit. So I think it's a no-brainer, and it should be out there more, and the word needs to get out more. It's literally saving lives being in a Tesla versus another car. So I think the statistics are already showing it. It needs to be pushed out there more. You know, I don't know how to get the word out more, but it's certainly a passion of mine to try to get that out there more.
Yeah. Did you hear about, there's this one guy who tweeted, he was in this brutal car accident. He was going up to Big Bear in California, and then his car hydroplaned, and because it started to rain, and his car fell off a cliff. Like, I think it was like 50 or 60 feet or something crazy, like head down, like, you know, frunk down.
Oh, wow.
And he came out, like him and his family or something, came out like completely fine. And he attributes it to the Tesla. You know, he says in any other car, he probably would have been dead.
It'd be blowed up, probably, the gas, you know, whatever. A nightmare.
Yeah.
They walked out fine.
He said there's some scratches, but otherwise, I mean, the car was just like completely totaled.
That story should be like national news, you know, like you talk about one autopilot, questionable autopilot death that wasn't even on this national news. Why can't this story be national? That's an example of all these like things happening that somehow isn't getting, it's only out there amongst the Tesla community, but people outside of Tesla don't really see it.
Yeah, it's probably one of the most underrated, you know, aspects of Tesla, but it's also bullish long-term too, because
Yes.
you know you've got this kind of most
The
fundamental, most
stock is bullish
most
long term.
important feature that is still kind of under the cover, kind of has yet to be completely exposed or known. So eventually I think people will figure it out. So we have this question here. Before I ask it, the overall question is, how do you value robotaxi in kind of your 5 or 10 year kind of outlook on how you value Tesla or not? I know some people don't. I know Gary Black was saying like he doesn't put robotaxis right into his model. I was listening to Gally from Hyperchange. She was saying he doesn't like to put robotaxi into his model until it's kind of, starts to get revenue. What are your thoughts? Is robotaxi an important part of valuing Tesla 5 or 10 years out for you or not?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm very confident Tesla will be the largest company in the world by the end of this decade. And that's in large part because of the success of self-driving and hopefully robotaxis. I mean, I could see it being where Teslas are fully self-driven for years before there's some law, there could be some law put in place where a driver has to be in the front seat while the car is driving by itself or something. That could be in place for years potentially. I don't know, until other competitors catch up, that lobby Congress too or something. But nationally, there'll be other countries that allow it and so forth, I would imagine. But I think the technology will certainly be there in 5 years, from now. 2 years, I don't know, 3 years, maybe, probably 4 or 5 years, most definitely, 10 years, 100, yeah, I'm like 95, 98, 99% sure 10 years it'll be there, So I do think it's a large part, and I think Tesla will be the first one to do it in a massive scale, and I think it's a large part of hidden value to be yet to be unlocked. I don't know how to value it yet. There's ARK puts out their models, and that's helpful. I don't think anyone really knows exactly how it's going to be valued. You have certain parameters you can try to work around, but I know it'll be massive value to be unlocked, starting with the full self-driving subscriptions here and the take rate of the full self-driving. And then if there's some service on top of it, transportation as a service that can be done on top of it, that would be incredible. So to me, it's a big part of my opinion on where Tesla will be 5 or 10 years from now.
I kind of, yeah, same here. I mean, I look at kind of full self-driving in the most basic fundamental way. I feel like it adds the ability for Tesla to make more margin on each car. And whether or not that's like a monthly subscription or a one time or via a robotaxi network, indirectly, whatever way, it feels like it just seems inevitable that this feature is going to work. It's going to add tremendous value, and that Tesla is going to be able to charge more per car, like basically make more profit per car than selling a dumb car, that people have to drive. And so, at 20 million vehicles in 2030, like Tesla's goal, I think if it's a dumb vehicle, I think Tesla could make, $5,000 per vehicle profit. And that's $100 billion profit. And if you give, let's say, a PRV of 50 or so, because they'll still be growing, they'll have other lines, then that's a $5 trillion market cap company. But I think with, full self-driving, I think they can make at least like $10,000 per car. In variety of ways, whether it's monthly, one time robotaxi, whatever, the combination of that, I think they can make $10,000 per car, times 20 million. That's basically 200 billion, right? And you put whatever multiple you want, if it's 50, if you do 40 or 30, but it's basically a pretty large sum, and I think a lot of that is of that concept is dependent on, Tesla solving this problem and being kind of ahead of the game. And that gives them leverage, right, to be able to make more margin. But yeah, it is a, it, I think it definitely is a big kind of way I think about Tesla's future as well. All right, so I want to ask you this question by Twitter user TreeWX. He says, Emmett seems to adopt a risk-reward model instead of a discount-to-value model. Is that correct? And if so, can you give more color on that? Why does he choose to invest this way? What are its advantages and disadvantages? I thought this was actually an interesting question because I think most of the time, like when you're looking at a stock or a company, you want to get it at like a lower value or valuation than what, you know, than what you think it's going to be at, right? At a later date, obviously. So you want a discount. But then there's also this idea of kind of this risk reward model where apart from valuation, right? Evaluating the market cap of the company, you're looking at kind of like the odds of you knowing something that others don't know. For example, mm-hmm. you think it's a 90% outcome, but everyone else thinks it's a 10% outcome. And mm-hmm. if your 90% outcome works out, you think you can do a 10X, right? With your returns mm-hmm. through leveraged mm-hmm. plays or something. So that type of approach is more of a risk-reward approach. Maybe it's not necessarily trying to get like a discount to value, right? Model that mm-hmm. This user is talking about. So I guess, yeah, what I want to echo this person's questions here. So, yeah, can you give more color? Why do you choose to invest with this way? Do you invest with, I guess you might also have a combination, right? Where you do sometimes
yeah.
Risk reward and you have valuation. Like, yeah, what are the advantages, disadvantages? Any thoughts on kind of this idea?
Yeah, I think I've referenced a few times the Interactive Brokers Probability Lab, for example, and I use that, you know, options, the way they're priced by the market, the options market, you know, with the Black-Scholes formula or the binomial formula, whatever formulas the market makers are using, there's a pricing embedded in the options, like long-term options, like 1 or 2 year out options that implies what the market thinks, you know, the probability is a stock will be at X or Y by that time, you know? And so with that kind of interesting analysis I've looked at, I've kind of been able to work backwards. I like to like start from the end and try to work backwards on things. Like when I open up a long email or a long article, I often go to the bottom and kind of like look through the bottom and kind of work my way up and look for quotes or signal, you know, but I just like to start from the conclusion, my potential conclusion, and work backwards. And potential, I mean, like I try to assign my own probabilities. Like, you know, we talk about Tesla all the time, or Lemonade. Is Lemonade going to be a $6 billion market cap company in 2 years, or do I think it could be a $20 billion market cap or $10 billion? What's the probability in my head that I could get to that in 2 years or whatever? Tesla, it's $550 billion market cap or $600 billion market cap. Do I think it'll be a $1 trillion market cap in 2 years? You know, what's the probability? And we've talked about this stuff on the channel. And for me, it's just a helpful tool to use for my decision making. You know, everyone else on Wall Street is using the discount, you know, method, and there's no gain for me there. You know, I can just do what everyone else is doing. But if I can find a different method for me that works, that seems to make sense, then I can, you know, make some bold bets there and do well, you know. And so when I see a very obvious mispricing from what, you know, and options are a great tool, and options can show me like the probability of the market showing for a stock to get to a certain price by a certain time. And if I think that's way off, then I can put my money where my idea is and make a bet against that by buying that option. You know, and I did that for the S&P inclusion. You know, I didn't think it was probable, but I thought it was more than like whatever the 7% chance the market was giving it, you know? So I put a lot of money on that and it worked out, you know, or Tesla, you know, like from 2014 all the way to, from 2014, 15, 16, 17, I thought there was a higher chance Tesla would be worth like 100 or 200 billion by the end of the next year. And so I kept buying these options and it wasn't working out, you know, but eventually in 2019, it worked out in a massive way, right? So I kept doing it, you know, so it's not going to work out a lot of times. I just have to accept that and not put all my eggs in one basket on one idea, you know, but that's kind of what I like, the way I think about it. And I try to think in terms of probabilities of the things I think I know well. And then I try to make my decisions if I'm going to use options based on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. ran across our first interview we did in 2014, and I wow. added it to the our playlist, the Emmett Pepper's playlist here. So if people are interested in checking out this cool. interview, it's it's like closing in on almost a decade, but this is like the crazy. Early yes. days of Tesla, yeah. and definitely some fun insights and stories from that first interview 7 years ago or so. Pretty crazy.
Yeah, that was crazy. Yeah, we did a few like chats with me and you and a bunch of other people from mm-hmm. the Tesla Motors Club. I don't know if those old chats were recorded or not, but it'd be interesting to go back to some of those and watch them. I mean,
yeah.
But that was an interview with just like me and you pretty much, but we had a number of chats after some earnings those days too. Yeah.
All right. Want to thank you for this first session. I want to apologize to folks. I think Emmett told me actually we paused the video that my ruffling of papers is getting through into the sound. So I'll stop that. I didn't know that actually that my mic was picking it up. So this will be hopefully the last time I do that. Anyways, okay. our next section, we're going to be talking about possible Tesla stock split, the overall market direction. We're talking about Starlink IPO and some other topics. Can't wait for another kind of session here. And so we'll see you guys in a bit. All right, bye.